Maitreya said, Diti was thus informed by her husband, but she was pressed by Cupid for sexual satisfaction. She caught hold of the clothing of the great Brahmana sage, just like a shameless public prostitute. Translation responsibly. Maitreya said. Diti was thus informed by her husband.
Diti was thus informed by her husband.
But she was pressed by Cupid for sexual satisfaction. She caught hold of the clothing of the great Brahmana sage. Just like a public prostitute. Purport. The difference between a married wife and a public prostitute is that one is restrained in sex life by the rules and regulations of the scriptures, whereas the other is unrestricted in sex life and is conducted solely by the strong sex urge. Although very enlightened, Kashyapa, the great sage, became a victim of his prostitute wife. Such is the strong force of material energy. Amagyan timadandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya mano bishtam stapitam yena vuntale swayam rupa gadamaya dadati swapadantikam vancha kalpata rubyascha kripa sindhu bhinevacha Petitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare
Hare Rama Hare Rama
Rama Rama There's a famous section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is full of instructions to purify us. And the whole purpose of studying the Bhagavatam is to reach the Samam Bonam. What is the Samam Bonam of the Bhagavatam? Samam Bonam is Krishna. It's the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. It is hearing the 10th canto, the pastimes. Of the Krishna in Vrindavan, and then Mathura, and then Dwarka. So, to reach this, you have to study the Bhagavatam categorically. Prabhupada points this out in the introduction of the Bhagavatam. He said there must be a categorical study or a systematic study. The Bhagavatam is spoken systematically. If Shukadeva Goswami only had 10 days to live, 7 days to live. If there's only 7 days left, why didn't Krishna go straight to the 10th canto? Shukadeva Goswami. Why didn't he go straight to the 10th canto? Why didn't he just go straight there? You only have 7 days to live, so we just go straight to the 10th canto and we begin to speak that. So that you can just fully absorb your consciousness in Krishna. Exclusively. It's interesting that Shukadeva Goswami, he didn't do that. He spoke the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada, systematically or categorically. There is a system to it, although sometimes it's very hard to understand what that system is, how it's evolving, what the evolution of the Bhagavatam is. Because it's not chronological. Each canto changes dramatically in terms of its chronology, its history of the universe. The time frames change dramatically. Just like how does the first canto begin. The first three chapters are a philosophical discourse between the sages and Suta Goswami at Naimasharanya. And then fourth chapter, fifth chapter, and sixth chapter of the first canto, then we hear about the pastime of Narada and how Narada became Narad Muni. And then from there, in the seventh chapter, then we hear about Ashwatthama and Krishna appears, and then it enters into the Mahabharata, which is the end of Dwapara Yuga, the beginning of Kali Yuga. That runs for around about four chapters till chapter 11, and then we hear the pastime of Parikshit, and how Parikshit appears within this world, which then goes forward. And then you go to the second canto, and the second canto goes right back again to the beginning of the universe, and you hear about Brahma's appearance. And then you hear about creation, Sarga and Visarga. So there's no chronology in the Bhagavatam whatsoever. There's no time frame which is running chronologically. Normally you would think, in a logical way, you go to the beginning of the universe, you begin with Brahma, and then you come back down like that. But the Bhagavatam does not follow that system. The Bhagavatam is following the system that there is a philosophical thread which is there within the Bhagavatam. And as you study it and you go through philosophically and you follow that thread, then you're meant to be becoming purified of the, and you're meant to be imbibing the particular lessons which the Bhagavatam is teaching us. So Prabhupada says in the introduction, before you even get started, Prabhupada says, by the time you get to the end of the ninth canto, you'll be a God-realized soul. And then you'll understand Krishna properly in his entirety, in terms of him being the Ashraya. He is the tenth subject matter of the Bhagavatam. He is the Samam Bonam, Prabhupada calls the tenth canto, which means the final refuge for everyone. He is the absolute truth. Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. So, the Bhagavatam is taking us through very systematically. Now, if you study the Bhagavatam in its entirety, and that's necessary, devotees sometimes question Prabhupada about how we would study his books. Prabhupada, how should we study? What should be the system? So Prabhupada said, just like an apple, you can pick up an apple, and you can bite it from any side, any direction, and it will taste sweet. So Prabhupada said, you can pick up any of his books. You can go to the shelf, right, 17 volumes of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Bhagavatam used to be 36 volumes. Now they've condensed everything down. So you can pick up any book, pick it up, begin to read, and you will taste nectar. Just like the apple, you'll just bite it, and it's sweet from any direction. But Prabhupada said, you have to systematically study his books at some point in time. So then he gave an outline. And the outline was, first of all, you study the Bhakti Shastri. So then we have basic books, which must be imbibed first of all. So you have Gita, Ishapanishad, Nectar of Instruction, Nectar of Devotion. So Prabhupada said, first, study those. He also said, four books are the pillars of ISKCON in terms of our philosophy. So he said, you must study those four books. So that means Bhagavatam, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which was then expanded into Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Gita, and the Nectar of Devotion. When I took initiation, the day I took initiation, I went and had a darshan with my guru, Tamal Krishna Goswami. And I asked him on that day, I said, what should I read? Actually, no, it wasn't that day, it was the year before. It was the first time I had a darshan when I met him. I said, what should I read as a new devotee? So he said, for me, the instruction he gave me, he said, you read Gita, first canto Bhagavatam, Nectar of Devotion, Krishna book, and Prabhupada Lilamrita. So I looked at him, a little stunned. He just said, five books. He said, read these five. I said, how do I do that? And he said, well, if you're going to university, you have to study many things simultaneously. So he said, you read them all. So I did. It took me several years to complete that, to read them all. But we can system. If we make time, we can do it. Sometimes devotees would say to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I don't have time to read your books. Does anyone feel like they struggle? Prabhupada said we should read 1 to 2 hours a day his books. So devotees would sometimes say to Prabhupada, we find it very difficult. Prabhupada said, can you eat and sleep? Do you have time to eat and sleep? Then you have time to read. In other words, if we reduce our bodily necessities to a practical level, not to an artificial level, but to a practical level, then there is so much time to read and to chant. But the fact is, if we analyze our lives, we waste a lot of time. So because if we waste a lot of time, then we're not reading, we're not chanting sufficiently. But if you control yourself, you become a Goswami, which is Rupa Goswami's first instruction in the Upadeshamrita, everyone become a Goswami. Everyone learn to control your senses. There will be proper time to read and chant. So you can't do it artificially. You can't push yourself beyond your limits. Just like Prabhupada, Tomok Krishnamurti was travelling with him on a train through India. So Prabhupada took rest 10:30, 11 at night. They were on a sleeper, overnight train. So Tomok Krishnamurti took rest, Prabhupada took rest. And then 2 hours later, Prabhupada got up. You know, that's what Prabhupada did. He slept 2 hours. So he got up, turned the light on, because he was ready to do his translation work. He was travelling on a train somewhere through India. So Tomok Krishnamurti, the light was on, he woke up. He rolled off the bed, off the sleeping bag on the floor, offered his obeisances and sat up. You know, because Prabhupada was, he didn't want to sleep in front of his guru. And Prabhupada said, take rest. He said, it is not for you. No, 2 hours is not for you. Not that. 6 hours is for you. You can do it. So then Tomok Krishnamurti took rest as service to the guru. So, the point is that we should read Prabhupada's books more, we should study them more, and we should study them systematically. And Prabhupada wanted this. And there's a difference between casual reading and study. And that's why Prabhupada set up these courses. That's why he set up the Bhakti Shastri, the Bhakti Vaibhava, the Bhakti Vedanta, and then the Bhakti Sarvabhauma. The Bhakti Sarvabhauma at this point has not been taught within ISKCON. That is the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Everyone is very, very cautious to approach that book. What to speak of all the others. We hardly have qualification to speak on anything. If you go back to the first canto, in the first chapter of the first canto, there's a verse which gives the qualification if you want to speak and give Bhagavatam class. And what does it say? It says we have to have studied all of the Vedas. Okay. So I'll finish the class just there. Thank you very much for coming. Hare Krishna. So you have to have studied all the Vedas. It says you have to have complete control of sex desire. Okay, so I'll also get off the Vyasasana right now. And it gives qualifications which are extremely high, which are not easy to attain. So Prabhupada made it practical. Prabhupada said, just repeat what you have heard from your guru. That is a qualification to give the Bhagavatam class. Just repeat. Do not change anything. Do not concoct or speculate, but just give the... And follow the regulative principles. At least if you cannot be free from sex desire, at least control it on the gross platform. And study the Veda. You should be sufficiently studied, sufficiently learned. Prabhupada says that we should know his books as well as the Christians know the Bible. You know, sometimes you meet the Christians. They say in John 6:8 it says, I am the way, the truth, and the light. No one can, you know, so they know the Bible better than we know the Bhagavad Gita. Or Prabhupada said, like the lawyer knows the law book. The lawyer, when he goes into court, he says, in this case, it said here in 1968 in San Francisco, and then he gives the evidence. So he has to know the law books, and then he becomes expert. So Prabhupada said, we should know his books like that. So, there's a difference between casual reading and studying. Studying means we study it very systematically, and we study it under a qualified teacher. And as we study under the qualified teacher and study very systematically, we need to imbibe the lessons of the Bhagavatam. It is not a casual read, the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not something like, you know, one devotee said to me recently, he said, oh yeah, I read the Bhagavatam. I said, that's good. You read the Bhagavatam. Will you read it again? Have you imbibed it all? Do you understand it all? Have you realized it all? Do you practice it all? Is it non-different from your consciousness? Guru Mukha, Padma, Vakya, Chitte Te, Koriya, Aikya. Aikya, Eka means one. Guru Mukha, Padma, Vakya. What does that mean? Vakya. Vakya means the speech. Guru Mukha, from the Guru. Padma, his lotus mouth. Vakya, what he speaks. Chitte, what does chitta mean? Conscious. We are all conscious. So make the Guru's instructions, or the Bhagavatam's instructions, one with your consciousness. Hridaye prakashito. Prakash. Prakash means illuminated. Hridaya means within your heart, your consciousness. Your heart should be illuminated with Krishna. You should absorb this within your consciousness. That is the point of study. That's why we study. And actually, when we study, it is called swajaya. What does that mean? Swajaya. Swa. What does swa mean? Self. Yeah, your own self. Swa. And jaya. Or jayato. Yeah, jayato vishayam pumsam. Krishna says this in Gita. Or jnana. What does jaya mean?
Meditation.
So swajaya. Study. When we study the Bhagavatam, when we study Prabhupada's books, it is swajaya. It is self-study. Okay? This is what Maharaj Parikshit is like. Right? Now, compare that to myself. Am I like that? Arjuna is known as Gudakesh. What does Gudakesh mean? One who conquered sleep. Now compare that to yourself. Are we Gudakesh? Are we on the level like that? Arjuna was so Krishna conscious and so pure and so absorbed. Dronacharya, because he used to practice archery all day, Arjuna. All day, just practicing. He loved it. You know, young kids are like when they get into something like cricket. Just all day, just boom. All day. So Arjuna was like that, archery, just all day, just shooting everything, firing everything. So then, Dronacharya said, do not let him eat in the dark. And he said to the devotees, the servants in the ashram would bring him prasadam every day in the evening because he practiced all day, the sun would go down. He would sit in his tent and he would take prasad in the evening. And they put a candle in there so he could. They were practicing in the Himalaya in the foothills. That's where they went to practice. The Drona was training there. He said, don't let him eat in the dark. So then they were feeding him. He was taking prasad in the tent. And then the wind came through the tent and blew out the candle. And then in the candle went out, so then he started eating in the dark because there was no candle. But then when he started eating in the dark, he thought, now I can practice archery in the dark. I don't need light. So then he got the bow and the arrow, he went outside and started shooting everything like that. So he was just so absorbed in his consciousness. That was his level. So that's Gudakesh. He conquered sleep. Even at night time, he wasn't sleeping. He was just out practicing archery. He was so absorbed, so locked in on his service to Krishna. So we should also become something like that. So when we study, it is called swajaya. You study something and then you compare it to yourself. Am I like that? How can I become more like that? Because we have to understand realistically, we cannot become like these personalities in the Bhagavatam. What's a good example of a chaste woman in the Bhagavatam? We hear about the pastime of Gandhari. It's told in the Mahabharata, like extensively. But in the Bhagavatam, she's mentioned. So she found out she was getting married, right? And she didn't want to invade a culture. You don't want to make your husband feel inferior to you. That's called marriage psychology. You have to always make the husband feel like he's more intelligent and more qualified, even though most of the time he's not. But you have to make him feel like that. It keeps the marriage peaceful. It's just the Vedic system. So you make him feel like he's in control and he's superior. So she had to make him feel like that. So as soon as she found out she was getting married, then she picked up a blindfold and blindfolded herself. She found out the emperor was blind, so therefore she also took the vow, I will not sin. Right? So we can't compare ourselves to that. You know, no woman in Kali Yuga is going to do that. Right? And there's no man. You compare yourself to all the men in the Bhagavatam, all the males in the Bhagavatam, you can't compare yourself to them. It's not possible. We can't become Parikshit, we can't become Yudhishthira, we can't become Arjuna, we can't become
Shishupal.
We can't become Shishupal. Hey, thanks much. It's actually true, we can't become. But there's negative things, and that's an interesting point, actually, that just like in the Gita, if you analyze the way Krishna teaches in the Gita, Krishna gives the positive example, and then straight after that, he gives the negative example. Right? What is the best way to highlight what is white? If you're trying to teach someone what is white, the shade of white, then you contrast it against black. You go say, so white is not this. Right? You want to understand what is love for Krishna, then you contrast it against karma or lust. Right? Lust is like that, prema is like that. They're two different things. So when we hear the negative examples, because there are many negative examples in the Bhagavatam, just like this pastime that we're reading now, that's a negative example. Then when we hear these negative examples, they're meant to show us this is what you should not be. So Shishupal is like that. Mainly he teaches us that. This is what you should not be. Do not criticize or blaspheme. Do not be envious. Envy destroys everything. And Prabhupada actually says, or actually the Bhagavatam says, but if you go back to the first canto, the very opening verses of the Bhagavatam, they say the Bhagavatam is for those who are near Matsara. What is near Matsara?
No envy.
Yeah, no envy. Matsa means envy. And near means without. So the Bhagavatam is for those who are without envy. That's the entire, in one sense, that's the entire lesson of the whole Bhagavatam. You can only get back into the spiritual world if you conquer this one quality. We left the spiritual world because of this one quality. We became Matsara. Why is Krishna getting all the attention? That's what happened. That's the moment we left. Why is Krishna getting all the attention? I've been serving him for 33 billion years. So as soon as that slight envy came into our consciousness, we left. We went into the material world. So to be what we need to see what we should not be. So here, there's a famous pastime. What are we hearing about? Diti or Aditi? Diti. They were two sisters. So Diti, she was married to Kashyapa. And she became lusty. So this is the example that we're taught in the Bhagavatam, what we should not be. Now, where does lust come from? Originally, lust comes from the spiritual world. But in the spiritual world, it is unadulterated. It is pure. It is called Kama Rupa. If you study the Nectar of Devotion, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami, when he approaches the conjugal descriptions of the pastimes of Radha and Krishna and the gopis, he explains that this type of bhakti is called Kama Rupa, which means, Rupa means the form. It has the form that it appears like lust, but obviously it is not lust, but it appears like lust. So that's where it comes from. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is called Adi Rasa. It means the original rasa. Is the conjugal attraction between Krishna and the gopis and Radha. So then when that comes into the material world, how does it enter the material world? Through the glance of Mahavishnu. How do we enter the material world? How did we get here? We were glanced. Mahavishnu, he looks at Maya and then glances and he impregnates through the glance. We are all carried, all the jivas, carried through that glance. Now, as we enter the material world, who carries the glance? Who carries the jivas? Yeah, Shambhu means Lord Shiva. He takes the glance and he takes it because Vishnu himself will not touch the material energy directly. So how does he touch the material energy? Through his partial expansion of Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva takes all of us and he brings them to his wife Durga, or Parvati, or Prakriti, the material energy, and impregnates. And that's where we enter into the material world and we become covered by false ego. So false ego is the first of the coverings which we take on as we enter into the material world. Now, what is false ego? How does Krishna define that in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16? Now, what is chapter 16 called? Divine and demoniac natures. So Krishna says what we should be. This is another example of how Krishna teaches. He says what we should be, that's divine, and then he says what you should not be. So when he describes false ego, he says, Ishwara aham, aham bogi, siddho aham, balavan, suki. That Ishwara, I am Ishwara. Hands up if you are Ishwara. One honest devotee. Ishwara. Ishwara means I am the controller. All of us are, we are all Ishwaras. We all have control. I can control something. Right? We all have a certain amount of control. Krishna gives us control. But Krishna is called Parameshwara. Parameshwara, which means the supreme controller. We are minute Ishwara. We have Ishwara. We have ability to control, but not so much. Ishwaraham. So we think I am the principal controller. Ishwaraham, aham bogi. And I am the enjoyer. Bogi means the enjoyer. All the boga is meant for me. That's why in sadhana bhakti, and also in raganuga bhakti, and also in prema bhakti, in all levels of bhakti, we offer the boga to Krishna. Boga means enjoyment. You offer it to Krishna. You don't take it for yourself. Idam Krishnaya, idam na mama. When we do jogya, what do we chant? Idam Krishnaya, this is for Krishna. Idam na mama, this is not for me. That is the consciousness. So we offer the boga to Krishna. Not that aham bogi, I am bogi. That is false ego. That is what we think in the material world. We all think I am the enjoyer. So Lord Shiva is the Lord of false ego. So when he carries us in the material world, he covers us with false ego. And as we enter the material world, then we think, I am the enjoyer, I am the controller. And that is our consciousness in the material world. So we see that all of the perverted rasa in this material world, this verse says, and the Bhagavatam has already said early on, maituni bhav means the sexual attraction between male and female, according to our false ego in this material world. This is what keeps us away from Krishna. Sometimes we think we are male because of our ahankar. We take birth in a male form, and then you think, I am male. Or you take birth in a female form, and you think, I am female. And you have a different type of false ego, but it's the same thing. It's false ego. I am the enjoyer, separate from Krishna. So that is the what keeps us bound in the material world. So here, we hear about Diti, she approaches Kashyapa improperly. So what does Kashyapa say in the preceding verses, the last few verses? He says, do not conceive at this time. He says to the wife, you want to have a baby? You want to enjoy sex life? But not at this time. And she will not listen to him. She becomes overwhelmed by calm. So calm is lust. Prabhupada said, this is public enemy number one. It's even more dangerous than Osama bin Laden and George W. Bush put together. Public enemy number one. Who is the most dangerous person in this world? It is lust. And you don't even have to go outside of yourself. It's all in here. And Krishna analyzes it very nicely in the end of the third chapter of the Gita. He dissects lust, so we understand it very particularly. Because the Bhagavad Gita is spoken to the buddhi, to the intelligence. Krishna uses that term buddhi yoga how many times in chapter 2? 12 or 14 times. I can't remember how many times, but it's been counted. He says buddhi yoga. Krishna says, if you read chapter 2 of the Gita, he says buddhi yoga, buddhi yoga. He uses that 12 or 14 times, that term. So the Gita is spoken to our intelligence. So Krishna dissects lust in the third chapter. Arjuna says, what makes me do something even when I don't want to do it? Right? Does anyone have that experience? Have you ever known that you should not do something but you still do it? Right? Does anyone know what I'm talking about here tonight? Yeah, it happened to you once or twice. Yeah, it happened to me once. I couldn't believe it. Like that. Happens all the time. Right, every day. I know I should not do that. I know I should not have that second rasgulla. But there's no one here. All right? And it's 12 o'clock at night and I'm in the cool room by myself. I know when I lived in the Brahmachari Ashram, I know devotees used to wake up at 12 o'clock at night and go and eat like 8 rasgullas and go back to sleep. So what is that called? Because Arjuna says to Krishna, what is that? And Krishna says, Kama Esha, Krota Esha, Rajagunu Samudbhava. It is calm. It is your lust. Your desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. So in the beginning, we have that desire. So Prabhupada said, take prasadam as much as you want. First 6 months, Prabhupada said, you can eat so much, you waddle like a duck. Right? He said, you can just take as much protein. And you see all the devotees, they join, they put on weight. Because they take so much, because you have to satiate your senses initially. Because you're restricting yourself from the material energy. But in due course of time, you need to control it. Rupa Goswami says that in the Upadesamrita. You have to get control of your tongue, your belly, your genitals, your mind, your anger, and your speech. Yeah, he says you have to control these things. So sooner or later, you have to learn to control. But in the beginning, you have some license. Prabhupada said, first 6 months, then satiate yourself. But after that, then you have to control. So calm is the defect. So then, Krishna analyzes in the third chapter. So then he says, where is calm? Because if you're going to fight an enemy, you have to know where the enemy is. Right? So then he says, it's everywhere. Right? Which makes it problematic. It's in our senses. It's in our mind. It's in our intelligence. Our false ego is basically constituted of it. Right? And it's everywhere outside of us. He said all the sense objects. Right? So lust is just, and it permeates the atmosphere. Like you walk outside of this temple, right? And then just it permeates the atmosphere. It's everywhere. You walk down the street these days, billboards got inappropriate things on them, right? You know, touch the internet, bang, inappropriate things come up. You watch television, inappropriate things. Listen to the radio, they talk about nonsense. So it's just the atmosphere is just bombarding. People do not dress appropriately, they don't act appropriately. You know, I've been on the tram coming back from the city back to here, and I heard one guy, I was reading, I don't know, something, it was years ago, and I'm reading, you know, Prabhupada's books. And the guy's got his phone, and he's, you know, speaking the most, improper things publicly. I mean, the tram had people on it. And he was just speaking about, you know, what he's doing, you know, sexually, and speaking like this. And I was just looking at him thinking, what are you doing, man? Like, even like, you know, apart from me being a devotee, like, even non-devotees, they don't speak like this. This is not, it's not cultured, it's not necessary. But the atmosphere is just so permeated by lust, and it affects our consciousness. So therefore, Krishna says you have to attack the enemy at the capital. And where does Krishna say is the capital of lust?
Mind?
Yeah, he goes a step further in the Gita. He says the capital, Prabhupada says in the third chapter, the capital is the intelligence. That's where lust, that's the capital. And that's where he rules the kingdom from. Because when your intelligence is lusty, you're always thinking, I want to do that. And, you know, you think, I want to do that. The mind says, thinking, feeling, willing. I want to enjoy my senses, but the intelligence says, okay, how are we going to do it? Right? And the intelligence says, how are we going to do it so no one catches us? And how are we going to do it so Guru and Krishna don't know? Right? And it's a bit hard because you can't do it so Krishna doesn't know. So Krishna is there. He's there even before you get there. He knows what you're going to do before you do it. He knows what desire you're going to have even before you have it. So you can't escape. But you can forget Krishna. Krishna says, Jnanam Smritir Apohanam Cha. He says, if you want to forget me, I'll allow you, I'll cover you. So you can forget me, so you can get on with your sense gratification. But when you want to remember me again, I'll illuminate your consciousness. So we have to make, Prabhupada points out, and Krishna points out at the end of the third chapter of the Gita, he says, how do you make the intelligence strong so you can defeat lust? And he says, by regulation and by shastric study. You have to become regulated. You have to live a regulated life. It's very important. It's fundamental to becoming Krishna conscious. It's fundamental to sadhana. You have to become regulated. Just like some devotees, they say, oh, I'm struggling and this is so difficult. My mind's giving me so many problems. What should I do? So we give the same advice to every devotee. We say, start getting up for Mangalapti. Regulate yourself. Get up early, chant your rounds early, hear the Bhagavatam properly, read Prabhupada's books every day, and then suddenly, not that everything goes away, but it becomes so much easier to fight against the enemy and to control your mind and your senses. So Prabhupada says, how do we make our intelligence strong? By reading his books. And Prabhupada said, if I have one criticism, my followers, they don't read my books enough. So you have to be hearing constantly. I don't read Prabhupada's books every day. Even though I should, but I don't read them every day. But I do listen every day to lectures by advanced Vaishnavas based on Prabhupada's books every day. Right? And that's how I keep my intelligence reasonably strong. Right? And I do read Prabhupada's books as much as I can. I'm reading them more and more as time goes by. But the point is that if you want to keep your intelligence strong so that it doesn't become... Because all of us battle with the material energy constantly. You have to read Prabhupada's books. You have to hear constantly. And Krishna says that is how you fight lust. That's how you control the mind and the senses. And then you can liberate yourself. So what happened here to Diti? She stopped reading Prabhupada's books. Big problem. Right? And then she became overwhelmed by public enemy number one, lust. And she went to her husband at an improper time. He was meditating. Very improper. It's socially unacceptable. It's very wrong. You go to your husband when he's in, chanting his japa, and you say, "I want to have sex now." Right? And he said, No, this is not appropriate. The time is, he said, "I'll give you a child, but the time is not right, the place is not right, the circumstance is not right." But she was overcome by lust. Right? Sometimes we all become like this. We become overcome by lust. So therefore you have to regulate yourself. You have to make your intelligence strong so you can control the mind. And then Prabhupada points out, you'll see in tomorrow's purport, he says that Kashyapa fell down. But Haridas Thakur was approached by two prostitutes on two separate occasions. One of them was Maya herself, and he did not fall down. So it is possible to resist Maya. But we have to become so spiritually strong that we will resist Maya. At the moment we're not that strong. We allow our consciousness to lapse into Maya periodically, internally or externally. Prabhupada says in the seventh canto, when he's describing the pastime of Hiranyakashipu, Prabhupada says the most opulent bedstead is the mind. Because in the mind, you can enjoy opulently sex life. Hiranyakashipu means opulent sex life. So in the mind, you can enjoy opulently sex life. So that, Prabhupada said, that is the most opulent bedstead. So we have to learn to control internally and externally our activities, become strong, and in that way, do not succumb to Maya. Eventually, we have to say no to Maya, even in the subtle body. The subtle body also has to say no. But it means you have to get a taste for Krishna consciousness. Param drishtva nibhatate. Krishna says something higher. If you're experiencing something higher, you can give up the lower thing. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
Desire is main problem. Main problem is envy. From envy, we get this
it short, Russell.
If you're making a comment, just make it short.
Is short in different areas of their
Yeah, other doers might want to ask questions also.
The last can be strengthened by meditation. By meditation on the lotus feet of Krishna, if you watch all the time, if during the chanting, if you watch his lotus feet, it says in Bhagavata, it says the intelligence is strengthened by meditation on Krishna's lotus feet. So when you chant, it's good to watch Krishna's feet. Because the mind thinks according to what we have in the head, and we can't transcend that. We can discriminate, but it says in Bhagavad Gita, even the senses and the mind are so strong and immature of Arjuna that they can carry away even the mind of the person who is discriminating. And reading the books can help discrimination, but that is not going to be the strength of the intelligence. Intelligence is good to read because it will put you under the shelter of internal energy, which will give strong intelligence. But the main point is strengthening intelligence is meditating on Krishna's lotus feet.
Any other question?
Could you read the second last line of the Shloka, please? And then we add the title.
In this one. Well, it's only a very short purport, so. The difference between a married wife and a public prostitute is that one is restrained in sex life by the rules and regulations of the scriptures, whereas the other is unrestricted in sex life and is conducted solely by a strong sex urge. Although very enlightened, Kashyapa, the great sage, became a victim of his prostitute wife, such as the strong force of material energy. Any question? Yeah, become more like them.
In the service mood.
Yeah.
Not the personality.
Yeah, not that. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't mean it like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't mean it like that. Yeah, Prabhupada says in Nectar of Devotion, he says that when you get to chapter 15 and 16, then he discusses Raghunuga Bhakti. He says it doesn't mean we want to become Mother Yashoda. You want to follow in the footsteps. That's what Anuga means, to follow. So when we practice devotion, the Bhagavatam is teaching, you want to follow in the footsteps of those people. You want to be like Prabhupada, not become Prabhupada, because we can't be Prabhupada. So.
And that means his service mood.
Yeah.
And
attitude.
Yeah. That's good. Prabhupada once said to a disciple, when they said, you're so amazing, you did this and that, Prabhupada said, now you become like me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Prabhupada was pushing us, but he realized we could not become like him.
And even if some of his disciples can do as much as they've done, but they can still not get to the level of what Prabhupada did actually.
Mm. Yeah, no one can do what he did.
I have a question as well. You mentioned about identifying with the particular body we have, and that's false ego. What about identifying with our service? Like, I tend to really think of myself as an artist, or this or that.
Mm. Yeah, so in Bhagavad Gita, then Krishna speaks about different types of surrender and different levels of consciousness. And in Surrender Unto Me, Burujan Prabhu, he analyzes this and he calls it the yoga ladder. So there is what is called Sakama, Karma Yoga, and there's what is called Nishkama, Karma Yoga. So Sakama means, sa means with desire, Sakama. So I have desire to serve Krishna in this way. So that's one level. So most of us identify with our conditioning heavily. You know, we're heavily conditioned. Most of us think I'm male or female heavily. Heavily conditioned by the material body, even though spiritually we may not be male or female. We may have the opposite gender in the pastimes of Krishna. So we have particular identification, and then extending from that upadi, or that identification of male or female, then we think, oh, then I'm a doctor, a lawyer, an artist, like that. And we want to serve Krishna in a particular way. But that may not be constitutional. That may not be our swarupa, our original relationship with Krishna. So that is good. It's part of the yoga ladder. So if you have attachment to working in a particular way for Krishna, then you do that in this world, and it purifies you. And then you go from Sakama Yoga to Nishkam. Nishkam means you become desireless. That will take time. But then you get to a point where you just say, I'll do anything for Krishna. I'm good at doing this particular thing, but it doesn't mean like, you see sometimes devotees, like they have one particular service, and then they walk through the temple, and the temple's dirty, there's garbage laying around, or there's, you know, stuff on the ground like that. I won't pick that up because that's not my service, and I'm a brahmana, and that's muchi, and I'll get that. So that's not nishkam, that's a lower level of bhakti. A higher level of bhakti is, you know, Prabhupada said, you see something needs done, do it. You know, just like there was that devotee, what was it, Vishal? I can't remember, it might have been Vishal, one of Prabhupada's disciples. So Prabhupada would go on a morning walk in Vrindavan, he'd come back through the gate in the morning, and he was there and he was chanting, we've met your grace by the arrangement of providence, and he was doing these. And Prabhupada walked past him 3 days in a row, and on the fourth day, Prabhupada walked past and he stopped and he said, do something practical. He said, pick up the rubbish. He said, the courtyard is dirty, clean it. Do something practical. So that's the point. So nishkam means we have our nature and we will act according to our nature, but if there's another service to be done, you do it. Desire less. Because the devotees, why do we chant Hare Krishna all day? Every time we chant Hare Krishna, saying, oh Lord, oh energy of the Lord, engage me in your service. Oh, now you've got an opportunity to do service. And you say, no, I don't want to do that service because that's not my nature. Then, you know, what are you asking for? You're asking Krishna for an opportunity to serve. So a devotee has to analyze his consciousness and he has to see, is that service attitude running through my consciousness continuously? Ahoituki apratihata. Unmotivated and uninterrupted. I just want to serve Krishna under any circumstance. And it doesn't matter what the service is. I'll take up any service at any time. But still you have to focus on your particular service. Prabhupada also, because you have to be practical as well. Because Prabhupada said, everybody's servant is nobody's servant. You can say, I'm going to serve everybody and do everything. But then you're nobody's servant. You may be totally impractical. And sometimes devotees are like that. They come in and start doing a service you don't want them to actually do at that point in time. Yeah, they come in, they just start doing it. They say, Prabhu, like, you know, either I'm doing it or someone else is doing it. Or it has to be done in a particular way. It has to be done in a particular time. And you're just coming in and just doing it because, you know, so Prabhupada said you have to be practical as well. Does that answer your question? Give some clarification or confusion? That's good. Okay. Get a point?
I'm just wondering, this identification as a Brahmana, Kshatriya, is that still also according to the, you know, where does that fit on that
domain
you were just speaking about? And is that still a bodily concept as well?
Yeah, it's a bodily concept. It's a bodily concept. So, you know, we act according to our nature. All of us have a nature. Like Muchakunda is saying, he's an artist. You know, I like to study. You know, someone likes to manage. So everyone has their nature. So you use that in Krishna's service, but it's not constitutional. It's not your eternal position to do that. So Varnashram is just the bodily identification. But as Prabhupada says, or he explains that if you have a thorn in your skin, you have to take another thorn to take it out. So the thing that's causing your conditioning, which is identification of the body, use that nature to release yourself from that identification. So if you have a particular nature, then you do that for Krishna, conditionally. But you don't understand that's not, you know, in the spiritual world you won't be doing those things. Yeah. One thing I'm looking forward to in the spiritual world, there's no computers. One thing I'm looking forward to in the spiritual world, there's no computers. There's no one sitting around in the spiritual world going like, you know, Radha and Krishna will meet at 6:30. You know, it's like, you know. So in this world we do certain things, you know, because that's our nature in this world, to use certain things in Krishna's service. But in the spiritual world we become liberated from all of that. And then we act according to our eternal relationship, which we've forgotten. So everything we use in this world is just to release us from this world. That's all. So, anyway. Yeah, because as soon as you accept regulation, you purify the mind and the consciousness. She's approaching him. The desire is correct. There's nothing wrong with the desire. A woman wants to have a child. That's natural. That's normal. That's fine. But she comes at the wrong time and at the wrong place. That's contaminating. So the same act, Krishna says in Gita, I am sex life, which is not contrary to religious principles. So that act of sex, that can purify and liberate if done in a pure state of consciousness. The same act, when done improperly, it contaminates the consciousness and keeps you bound in the material world. So that you can use sex to get yourself out, or you can use sex to keep yourself in. Right? So the way she's doing it, it's contaminating her consciousness. And what's the result? She gets the twins. Right? Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, and they wreak havoc in the universe. So it's not appropriate. It's not good. So sex life needs to be controlled. That's the lesson of the Bhagavatam. So how do you become purified by the act of sex? You have a kid. That's the natural consequence. And how do you get purified by having a kid? Just have one. And you'll see. Right? You get purified. Right? Because it teaches you, like I've become a father this year. Like, you know, I'm older in my life, but I became father for the first time this year. I've got a child. Right now I have to look after her and like that. And I love her and, you know, she's my daughter. So, you know, and I'm getting purified beyond my imagination. Because it takes you to another level of selflessness. Like I thought, oh yeah, I'm doing really well in devotional service, I'm really selfless, you know, I'm making advancement, my chanting's really good, it's all good. I haven't learned anything yet. One devotee told me before I got married, he said, you haven't learned anything yet. He said, you're about to start learning, now I'm starting to learn what it means to be selfless. Yeah, now I'm starting to understand it. Because I want to do this, but now I've got to do that. You know, it's just like my whole life has become, you know, I'm not coping anymore, I need to. No, it's not like that. But it just means that, yeah, it means that's what it's for. It's an education. So how does sex purify you? Sex itself doesn't necessarily purify you. But the result of sex, that's the purification. So if you want to have a child, that's what the Bhagavatam is teaching. It's fine, you want to have a child, but do it at the right place, do it at the right time, and get the right result. Right, she wanted, okay, now, I've got to do it right now, we've got to do it right here, right? He said, it's not, we're in the ashram, it's not the right place. I'm chanting my japa in meditation. Right? The circumstance is not correct, the time is not correct, the place is not correct. Lord Shiva's, you know, travelling around at the moment, this is going to be inauspicious. Fine, you want to have a kid, I'll satisfy your desire, but not now and not here. But because she wouldn't listen, then she got the result. And what was the result? Both do, but primarily the man. In a Vedic situation, primarily the man. In this day and age, I'd say it's closer to being equal. But back then, it's the husband's. He should, Prabhupada says in the next purport, he should have said no. He did so no, but he should have been stronger.
Why was he stronger?
Because he had lust himself. She was beautiful. Like these girls were beautiful girls. And not like what we have walking around now. No offense to anyone. Prabhupada said, compared to the girls in the heavenly planets, he said the girls down here are like frogs. Yeah, no offense. But they're just frogs. That's not what Prabhupada says. Prabhupada said the girls are like frogs. Yeah, and if you look in the Mahabharata and the Bhagavatam, but more in the Mahabharata, you see when they were getting ready to have kids, they would purify themselves for a year. Yeah, it wasn't just chanting 50 rounds on one day, it was a year of preparation of consciousness. That's how they did it, because they had to have strong children, strong progeny. know, when Parikshit was born, they had to, you know, prepare because this person is going to rule the country. So it's the same for us. You know, the more preparation you put in, the better result you get. Any other question? And there's no guarantee. There isn't. Because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was Naishtika. He never had sex, ever. And Bhaktisiddhanta, he said, I would have hundreds of kids if I knew they'd be devotees. Because you look at his brothers and sisters, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had 10 or 12, and not all of them were following. And even Advaita Acharya, who is, you know, Mahavishnu himself, he had, I think there was 5 kids, and one of them was a Mayavadi. Yeah, and then you look at Prabhupada's kids. Yeah, one of Prabhupada's kids tried to take ISKCON to court, and you know, so there's no guarantee. So you know, that's the thing. So then, what's the actual remedy for this whole thing? Just get out of the material world once and for all. Don't worry about having kids and all this. I mean, if you're in the material, fulfill your desires in a Krishna conscious way. But at the end of the day, we're not meant to be here because it's problematic. Yeah, you can do as much as you want, your kids still turn out to be rascals. And then I've seen other devotees who conceive their children not necessarily in the best consciousness at the best time of their life, and their kids are just powering as devotees. So it's up to the individual soul. What is that soul's desire? Because everyone has their independence. You can only give your kids so much, but then they'll do what they want to do anyway because they're individuals.
Religion number.